Now, I'm sure that many of you will be saying, oh, here we go, the prodigal son again. What can we get out of it this time? It's one of the most memorable of the parables that Jesus gives us, and there are many, but this one seems to stay in our mind and in the front of our mind much more so than many of the other parables. Not because of its length, I don't think. I think it's because the characters that Jesus has created in the story we actually relate to. Most of us would find the language that is used in describing the two boys, we fit fairly well into the model that they are presenting to us. That's a bit of a sad thing, but it's probably close to the truth. One of those two boys we have probably been or are at this moment. We have behaved in that way at some time, or we are behaving in that way at the moment. And if we are behaving in either way that the boys were, then we probably would be feeling a little uncomfortable when I stand before you and say, I'm holding up a mirror, which character are you? Because it is uncomfortable when we are told the truth, and the truth isn't always palatable. It presents us with an image in reality that we don't want the world to see. Most of the emphasis when we talk about the prodigal son, that story, it just depends where we sit and where, I suppose, where the deacon or the priest is at his own life and what's going on in his world as well, where the emphasis goes. But today I'd probably focus more on the second boy rather than the first. The reason why I'm a little bit more focused on the second is because we're not told whether the second son actually went in to the celebration that was being planned. Jesus leaves us hanging in a sense. And I still wonder, did he go in or didn't he? And you would be saying, I hope to yourself, would I go in or wouldn't I? I could go into the celebration and cause a real stir, get a few beers under my belly, and then tell that brother of mine what I think of him. And you might think, oh, that's a bit excessive. But you know as well as I do, families are very strange things. Nobody here comes from a perfect family, I'm sure. Even within the family of Joseph and Mary and Jesus, they had their times of anxiety. So I don't know what the definition of a perfect family is. If you were like me growing up we stayed at home all the time, until you get into probably your early teens, and where I come from, I lived out on a farm, so I didn't have the opportunity to go over to my best friend's place, who was just around the corner of another street away, because we're 30 miles out of town. So it wasn't until my early teens that I actually had a sleepover at somebody else's house. And that was the first time when I had that sleepover that I realised that all families are not like my family. Because when you grow up in the one environment and you don't get to see how other people live, you think that that's the way the world is. And then all of a sudden you get popped into another family environment and you realise, wow, these people actually don't shout at each other at dinner. I come from a family of six boys and there's one girl, and you might think this strange, but my sister ate with my mum and dad, except at major times during the year. So we had the six boys and we had a governess for the first years of my life. And so she would sit at the end of the table with three of the boys down either side. Very Victorian way of living. Nothing wrong with me. And I just thought that that was normal. And with boys out on the farm, they're fairly decisive in the way that they would say, pass the salt, you know, whack, and all that. And I just thought that that was normal. But when I went to a friend of mine's place and stayed for a weekend there, they spoke gently to each other. They prayed a prayer of grace before they had a meal. it was such a different environment for me. And I still remember coming away thinking, well, I don't know whether they're normal or my family's normal. And so we define a normal family these days simply by our experience. And what's normal for you is probably not normal for me. I've got no idea. And I have said from this pulpit before, as somebody once told me, there are only two kinds of family. There are the dysfunctional families and the very dysfunctional families. And these boys in today's gospel probably highlight that a little bit. The first character, what it does is, what often happens in families as well, is that poor behaviour brings out extreme good behaviour. So when we do something really bad, it can lead to something really good coming out of it, but there's the pain in the middle of it. So what we see in the gospel today particularly is very bad behaviour from both boys, and then that has created the opportunity from extremely bad behaviour to the most compassionate opposite behaviour from the father. And that's the purpose of the parable that Jesus puts before us. He's created a story to demonstrate how compassionate God is. Why does he do that? Well, it's in the opening lines. It's because the powers that be in Jesus' circle, which would be his extended family, they came forward and they said, you can't be a good person because you eat with tax collectors and sinners. And Jesus tells a story, makes up a story, to prove to them that there's a little bit of tax collector and a lot of sinner in everybody. And I don't care how perfect you think your family is, let me tell you, it's there. And so he goes on and tells this story. But it demonstrates, as I said, the ability of God to reach far beyond our own understanding. We very easily go to that nasty place. Most of us as children knew exactly what to say and when to hurt our parents and our brothers and sisters. We know it's all about timing, and it's about the kind of language we use. It's not usually just something that happens at the spur of the moment, because we know our siblings and we know our families very well, and we hurt the ones we love the most because they're accessible and we know exactly how to hurt them. We know how they will respond or react. We have boys reacting today, and we have a father responding today. And I've preached on that theme before. So responding is the way of compassion and forgiveness and love and mercy. Reacting is the way of fear and anger and hatred. If I could put it into a modern context for you, if you looked at what happened in New Zealand 2 weeks ago, that disgusting act of terrorism has brought out the most beautiful acts of unity in a very small country that's heart was broken for the world to see. Something horrible created actually something very, very beautiful. And I would also say that when we look at the leadership, the political leadership that takes place in the world at the moment, we see out of this awful incident the creation of what I think is one of the most powerful women in the world by her extraordinary act of compassion in Jacinta Ardern, the Prime Minister of New Zealand. If you read some of her language, she has not focused on the Muslim community, she's focused on New Zealand. And out of this awful incident, she has tried to pull her country together, and it seems to be working. That beautiful language of saying that we are not immune from the virus of hatred, but now we might have the cure. That gives people hope. And that's probably what the world needs more of at the moment, and our families need more of, is a sense of hope when things aren't going the way we want them to go. Hope is demonstrated in the story of the prodigal son by the father constantly waiting. We hear nothing of any judgment coming from the Father. What we see is him waiting for the Son, hopefully to return. And even then, when the Son does return, he's waiting for the other Son to come and join, and he doesn't. So what does he do? He goes that extra mile to invite, to bring his second Son in. Most of us would find that a real struggle to exercise such compassion and love. We put a limit, a condition, so often on our feelings, particularly those of love. And we need to uncondition ourselves so that we can exercise and experience unconditional love. So I think, moving away from the bad behaviour of the boys, the story of the prodigal son, particularly shining the light through the second boy, probably because I could identify with him a little stronger, but shining the light through his bad behaviour, I can see the greater experience that the Father offers. And that's what Jesus is trying to do by eating with tax collectors and sinners. It's not so much what we say, it's actually what we do that the world judges us on. So with, say, Jacinta Ardern, I've just quoted some words of hers, but the photos of her not saying anything but walking with people are very, very powerful as she tries to unite her country. We don't get a sense of that in Australia. In Australia, there's a great sense of when something doesn't go right in our Australian family, our political leaders tend to go straight to blame. And so we could all learn a little something from what's happened across the ditch, as they say. We can still constantly learn something from this parable. So immerse yourself into the characters there, the experience of your own growing up, the experience of your own family, the experience of your own good behaviour and not so good behaviour as we journey these last 2 weeks into Lent. And then have a little ponder, if you would, about what that second son did. Did he go in or did he stay out?